out on Facebook, The Portal, and on Twitter, @PortalGaming60. That's where you'll find me, the host of today's show, The Brant. And Portal Game Podcast is also a proud member of the Dice Tower Network. And for more excellent podcasts, you can go to www.dicetowernetwork.com. Howdy, everybody. Welcome to episode 162. This one is entitled, I'm Just So Tired of All These Star Wars. Howdy, everybody. Good to see you. I am here with my special guest and co-host, Eric Summer. Eric, how are you?
Hello, Brant. How are you?
I'm fired up and ready to go.
Good. Yes, indeed. You are quite fired up.
I love doing that intro. It's so fun. Get lots of energy. That's what I always find.
It's important.
And exciting. And it's kind of a nighttime for us, so I need some extra energy in terms of all that.
That is true. So how you been, sir? It's been a while since I've seen you.
I know. It's like we live closer now, but we're farther than ever before.
It is true. I do anticipate getting to see each other more often. I recently moved closer to you. I'm now in Simsbury, Connecticut, which is only about 20 minutes or so from the portal. And I have been there at least once with my youngest to do some shopping, although we haven't been able to play anything yet, waiting patiently for the time when we can do that. But that may be... I mean, that is my closest FLGS now, and I'm hoping to make it to more game nights once that becomes a thing.
Yeah, it's not too bad. I mean, I think I've told you I worked at Simsbury High School. I taught there for 7.5 years, and it's a phenomenal school system. I mean, what a great place for your kids. It's going to be so good.
So far, we've been enjoying it, yeah.
Yeah, I've loved working there. The only reason I left was I was going 1 hour and 10 minutes through Hartford traffic, and...
Yes.
It was too much.
Not a fan of the Hartford traffic. No.
Yeah. And we had decided, you know, to settle here in Southern Connecticut where family and church and other elements were that were important to us. So we didn't want to be closer there. So, you know, I switched jobs. But boy, did I love my time and my tenure at Simsbury. So,
yeah.
That'll be awesome. So nice. Yeah. So it's not too bad to the portal from there. So that should be what's happening. I'm excited because we have a new YouTube channel, which I've announced on several episodes now, but it's called Step into the portal because our whole idea was nobody was coming to play at the store because they couldn't. And so often you kind of drive up hype and enjoyment and positivity by people coming to the store and playing the games or seeing people playing the games. And that's just not happening. So now a new game comes out and I'm like, oh my gosh, this is from this acclaimed designer. And this people are like, okay, what is it? Let me look at the back of the box. And you're like, no, the back of the box isn't going to tell you enough. You need to see it played. And so then we were like, well, let's get people to see the games played. So we started live streaming playthroughs of games, and I can't believe how much I enjoy doing that. I had no idea. Now, you probably know I love teaching games. That's always been one of my favorite things. So this is my chance to just teach and then play the games. I do miss reviewing games, which is why I'm glad to keep doing the podcast, because I really like talking about games and just what I thought of them after a couple plays or one play sometimes or whatever it is. So, you know, typically we'll play and then we'll just kind of say what we thought about the game. But for often it's like the first play we're trying to get through and we opened up the box and here we go. So,
yeah,
but I'm excited once things are, I hate saying back to normal because it'll never be that way. But once things are playable again, I would love to have you come down and be on a stream with us. We can do our own Connecticut catch up a palooza, which I think is what they're doing down there in Miami.
Yes, indeed. A nice, you know, Dice Tower Network North gathering. It'll be nice.
Well, we can. I mean, we've got Gary and Jason and you and me and Jen.
Yeah,
we've
absolutely.
Got so many people from Dice Tower Network that live in Connecticut for whatever reason. We are Dice Tower North. So.
It is.
And,
yes.
And the Family Gamers are just north of us in Massachusetts. So.
True. Yeah, yeah. I would always run into the Family Gamers on the way back from PAX. For some reason, we'd always stop at the same rest area. Like there was this perfect rest stop on the way out, and we'd end up running into each other at this rest area.
Well, and Andrew was my roommate in college.
Oh, I did. You told me that. I remember.
Yeah,
that.
Yeah. And he was dating Anitra at the time, so
it's fascinating.
So yeah, it all works out the same. So yeah, how are you doing? Everything's good.
Good. You know, settling into the new house, running into lovely, frustrating issues building the new game room. That's been one of the big projects that I've been so excited about. Now, it wasn't the reason we moved, but it is one of the reasons why I've been excited about the new house. And unfortunately, the COVID issues and infrastructure transportation issues have caused IKEA to go totally out of stock of the shelves I chose. So like I did all this research. I watched Scott Nicholson videos and planned to build the room around these Besta style shelves and was able to get six of them piecemeal too. I think I got four at first and then we were able to get two more, but I couldn't get any shelves for a while because you buy them separately, the frames and the shelves. Finally got the shelves. I had to get them delivered, but still don't have the other frames that I want to finish up the room. So I have 60% of my games loaded into new shelves and they look great and I'm excited about them. But then I still have piles, which is the whole thing I was moving moving away from, all the piles of things that are supposed to go on the remaining shelves once I'm able to get them. But the entire country is out of these things. I've gone to the website and like, maybe I can drive to Massachusetts or something and pick up these things. No, there's none in the whole United States. And so I'm just waiting patiently. And it's just so frustrating to have this project that I want to complete and get a table up so I can actually start playing stuff in the game room.
Mm.
No, not yet.
That is frustrating. I wish I could use some of my Swedish clout to help you, but...
You head on down to New Haven IKEA and demand Bestas.
My dad says as Swedes, we always have to travel there at least once per year. So
it's the pilgrimage.
My parents are actually right down there next to New Haven. So,
okay.
So in terms of all that, nice. I actually didn't even say who Eric is. Eric is the co-host of the Dice Tower podcast, which is a somewhat popular podcast in the world of board games.
We're an institution at this point.
Yeah.
You know, all these other new folks are just zooming by us with all these new ideas, but we're still trucking away.
We're about
to hit episode 700, Brant.
I was listening today. I listened to about half the episode from today. I know that's unbelievable. I'm calling it though. I can hear it in Tom's voice. Episode 1000 is going to be the end. I can
tell
you.
He's
just going to end it. We're done. It's over.
He's not going to mention it till the end of the episode either.
That's right.
We're going to go through this big thing. And then he's like, all right, we're out. Wait, what? We're out. We're done. The end. We've done all the games. We're done.
Yeah. Nice.
It's been tough. You know, podcasting is such a weird time right now because people aren't traveling in their cars as much. And so it feels a little weird, like we're podcasting into the abyss a little. As listenership has gone down, I know I've got a huge backlog of podcasts that I'm trying to work my way through, but so many of my friends do this and I don't get to listen to them as often because I'm not walking the dog and I'm not driving the kids places. I'm not driving around nearly as much as I used to. And so it's tough to keep up.
Yeah, I hear you. I've listened to so many from the Dice Tower Network, you know, Board Game Blitz and Rolling Dice and Taking Names and Dukes of Dice and Blue Peg, Pink Peg, and I'm going to leave people Secret Cabal. And I found what I do is I try to listen to everybody once a month. So I don't catch everybody's episode, but I try to rotate through. But you miss some things, and I try to hit more for listening to their, you know, kind of their game section. I don't always get to all the other sections, but it's good to hear everybody's voice. It's like, I miss everybody. I didn't realize, you know, that, you know, I pretty much had started the Dice Tower East Gen Con PAX Unplugged like circuit every year.
Yeah.
That I was starting to do. I wasn't an international traveler, but those three I was catching every year. And there's a lot of people that you catch up with three times a year that suddenly you don't see them at all.
I was doing okay with the canceled events. I think the one that really hit me was Spiel in October. Mm. Just because that was often the only place I'd get to see people. I think I'm still mentally like, well, I'll see people at the next one. I'll see people at the next one. But when Spiel didn't happen, that was sort of but that's the only time I get to see some folks, you know, European friends and some publishers that I never get to see in other places. And And that's such a unique experience. It just, that one hit me harder than the others have. I'm holding out hope that things open up and we can start doing these again. And I know eventually I'll get to travel to these places again, but I miss the gathering and the going out to dinner together and just getting to sit down and play a game, you know, showing up at Gen Con the night before and setting up the booth and then sitting down and playing a game or two in the lobby of the hotel. That's something I'm missing tremendously right now.
Yeah. Yeah. It's been tricky. I've been lucky to have people to play games with, but it's like, it's the same crew, and not that I am disappointed by playing with them in any way, you know, playing with Brian and his wife, Rachel, they were living with us, and Kathy plays a lot of games, and Larry and I, kind of put each other in our bubble early on, you know? Yep. And so we've been able to do that. And I've been able to play, but it is still just that, you know, just those random board game nights, getting to see other people. I kind of had like a church group that was playing games. I had the Thursday night at the Portal, which was just whoever shows up, you know, you don't see somebody for a month and then you see them and all those kind of things. So,
My game group has been my kids, the 13 and 9 year old at this point. And that puts a bit of a limiter on games that I've been able to get to the table lately. Because if it's something that the 9 year old is not going to be able to understand, or something that's not going to hold their attention, or sometimes I've brought out something and they're like, I don't know if I want to play that, Dad. And unless I put my foot down and say, no, it's family game night and we're playing this right now. And that, I don't want to do that too often, because they just eventually start rebelling and they're like, you know, how do I end the game, Dad? How does the game end? And that's not the attitude I want to try and, you know, actually play something. If I'm not enjoying myself, if they're not enjoying themselves, I'm not going to enjoy myself either. And so it's been trickier getting some things to the table. I've had Tammany Hall on my shelf, which is a game that I have heard so many good things about. And the new printing has come out and I have not gotten a chance to play it, because that's just not one that the kids are going to be able to grok. And there's a lot of titles like that, unfortunately, that just haven't gotten to the table.
You don't happen to have Marvel Champions, do you?
I don't. Okay. No. I've seen a lot of the buzz about it, but that's not one that I have. I've considered bringing out Marvel Dice Masters with them, which I know is a very different thing, but I think that might have a similar appeal, playing with the different characters and battling things out in dice format.
Yeah, Marvel Champions has been like the thing we've been doing the most on the channel. That's kind of been our regular. As each new pack comes out, we've been really into it. And it's the one game that I have played like via the internet with people that I enjoy. Because I cannot do internet gaming. I played Roy's game, Last Light, that's coming out. And I enjoyed doing that on Tabletop Simulator, but Roy was running the whole game. I was playing with John from John Gets Games. And Roy was running the whole thing, and it was fun. It was fun to be able to hang out with people and play that. And Roy's game is excellent. It's very good.
Yes.
But the Tabletop Simulator thing is not me. Tabletopia, I tried a little bit, some of those cons they had, and it's hard for me. So I like the face to face. So at least something like Marvel Champions has been something I've been able to play via webcam with people, and it flows pretty well. And I've been able to teach it. I actually taught it at what was the BGG Dice Tower team up in the summer?
Yes, Virtual Con 2020. Yeah.
I was able to teach it to two or three families, and that was really good. They had kind of cracked the box, and I was like, okay, here we go. Let's talk through it. And so that was really fun. So that one's worked out really well, I've found.
Yeah. I think it's very important to have the live chat in some way. Whatever platform you're using, I have enjoyed being able to run a Zoom call or a Discord call while playing something, and I'm willing to accept some of the limitations of the interface of a Tabletopia or a Tabletop Simulator or Board Game Arena, which I've joined recently, and have really enjoyed that format. But having the ability to chat and not have to stop what I'm doing and type what I'm trying to do, is very important. Like if I'm trying to play Board Game Arena on the iPad, and so I don't really have chat capabilities, it's a lot more frustrating to have to type my comments and or teach a game. Like I've had a friends and wanted to teach them something. I'm like, we're not doing this until we can set up a Zoom call, so that I can actually walk you through that. And then it should be relatively simple. But you need that immediate communication connection to really make it feel as close as possible to being able to sit around the table.
Yeah, totally agreed. I want to just be able, even if I just talk to people beforehand, the game nights I've kind of done with my church group have mostly been like, hey, 10 people get on and let's play just one. Or let's play a Jackbox game or something very simple like that. I have one friend who kind of is a computer programmer, so he's been doing all these really unique games where it's like take all the scenes from Back to the Future and put them in order. And he programmed all that, and then he gets you into teams, and it's very well done. So he had that. So we were doing things like that, but I found those very light, really not even strategic games, just party games, were nice because everybody's just chit-chatting the whole time, and it's just a chance to kind of see everybody and have a game as the background, as opposed to like, let's play Twilight Imperium 4 via webcam, you know, and chat feature.
Yeah.
I'm like, I can't do it. I appreciate that it's there for people who can, but I'm way too social for that. I realize how the games are fun, but the people are also so important. So
I have recently played something over Zoom that I really enjoyed, and it was because of that interaction. Forgotten Waters. Have you played had a chance to play?
I did. Yes.
And this was my first attempt at this, and we haven't even gotten all the way through the scenario that we were playing, but it's such a, I didn't realize how much of an improv, not really improv, but how much of a individual storytelling aspect there is to it. You actually fill out a character sheet with Mad Libs.
Yeah.
And you have story beats, and as you complete individual objectives, you will trigger these story elements, but they actually relate to each other, and the Mad Libs fill in the blanks that you started with, and they relate to the other players on your crew. And part of it is played like when you reach one of these milestones, you then have to read out loud what just happened. And part of it is all about getting that reaction from your fellow players. And you would not be able to do that without that immediate, you couldn't do this over typing. You need to be able to have that reaction from people. But we have found, I've really enjoyed using the remote assistant for the game, running it at the Plaid Hat Games website, that keeps track of the whole game situation. And all I needed was a character sheet. We're playing off of another player's set. And so she is showing us where on the map we are, and then we can make decisions and switch back and forth with the remote assistant. And it's really working well. I liked it so much, I need to hunt down a copy for myself to attempt to play with the kids.
Ah. Well, I purchased the one that was at the portal, which I've done to you a couple times now.
You have, yes.
I see a couple times.
We should back up. It's because I have often texted you and said, hey, you know, this game is interesting. Do you know if they have it in stock at the portal? Because I know you're there often. And it is, you have often come back to say, yeah, they don't have it because I bought it.
I got two to you, right? I got you Fort and Super Skill Pinball.
You did indeed. Yes, yes. And we played 4K'd. Haven't had a chance to play Fort yet.
Okay.
But Super Skill Pinball, it has been a hit. That is one that it is a really solid game.
It's very, very fun. Yeah, and we have more copies in now too. So.
Oh, good.
That's good there. So. Nice. Yeah, I know. I've discovered so much. So the big things that I've discovered kind of in the last years, I've been replaying games. Like, I've been playing games 5 times.
What?
And I've been going back and playing old games. I think Kathy's been a big element of that in saying, like, why don't we play this game, Castles of Burgundy, that we really, really love, instead of trying out that new game that doesn't actually look like it's that fun. And I was like, what are you talking about? You don't want to play the new game with the misprints on the back of it?
No, absolutely. I found that, you know, when we first moved, the kids wanted to, when we did do a game night, they would want to find their favorites. So they were sifting through the boxes trying to find the Pathfinder Adventure card game. You know, let's play this. Let's play something I know. I don't want to learn any rules, Dad. Let's just do this one. It's good to go back and do that every once in a while and remind yourself why you like these games so much.
Yeah.
I've recently done that online with both Seven Wonders and Seven Wonders Duel.
Okay.
I've been playing a couple games of those, which has been kind of nice because especially with Seven Wonders itself, I haven't played physically in a long time. But it's kind of cool to go back and remind myself how much fun that was to draft those resources and try and build toward the purple cards and build your wonder segments and stuff like that. That's been a blast. I think of the two, I'm liking Duel better, which I guess is not that unpopular opinion. I think Seven Wonders Duel is the more refined system. And I kind of like the immediacy of knowing that my taking a card deprives specifically you of it and not necessarily hoping that something's going to get around the table to me. It's a little more nebulous when you're dealing with the whole table in the draft. But when it's just you and me, then I know that if I take this card, that's going to open up this other card for you to take. And you can play with that opportunity a little bit more than you necessarily can just interacting with the person next to you, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, I'm always surprised how much better, I think would be the term, I can handle take that in a two-player game than in a multiplayer game.
Sure.
In a two-player game, take that feels zero-sum to some extent. Yep. Or at least it's like, okay, I mean, there's still that negative of, oh, I'm going to blow up your building, but it's like, well, or, you know, maybe like kind of the hate drafting of Seven Wonders Duel. I'm going to take that card because I know you need it.
Right.
But I have to take that card. I can't use it. I'm just going to cash it in or whatever it is. But it feels like, well, that's what you should do. You should try to stop me from getting.
There's no other target for your animosity. And I mean, in a two-player game, you are supposed to be adversarial. Yeah, absolutely. That it does feel easier. Although I often try to avoid straight up two-player games for that same reason. Like, I think I just like playing the less adversarial games to begin with. And so I know if I'm going to sit down with you playing a two-player game, you are going to attack me. And I need to be in the right mindset to know that that's going to happen. That's fine. There are plenty of wonderful two-player games in my collection. But I need to sort of get myself ready mentally for that and say, all right, this is what we're doing. This isn't just build stuff and coexist. We're actually going to be head to head here.
Yeah, I think some of that started, you know, after. So we spent time. You'd been to the store. We spent time tearing down shelves, tearing things off the walls, redoing everything in the store. We did that from March through, let's say, May, and then I think stores were allowed to open again in like mid-May.
Okay.
And so I had done all that. You know, and then it was like, well, now we were at the store and, you know, it was open, but we couldn't really be out in the store. So we were kind of like in the back room and coming out to do a couple other things and whatnot. And so we had just started digging out like old CCGs and just two-player like miniatures games and all this kind of like collectible stuff that in my mind is just like, oh, I can't spend money on this collecting. But the key for me is I am not a tournament player and I am not a collector. And so those games just don't get under my skin as much as they do for other people, I think. I just say, oh, here's the cards I have. I don't need to buy more. This is what I have this much for Star Wars Destiny. I have this much for whatever it was we were playing, the old Star Wars CCG, Lord of the Rings, the card game from Decipher years ago.
Yes.
We started digging all those out and playing them and just building, like, let's just build a bunch of decks with whatever we have. And we're just playing oh, you beat me one, I beat you one. Oh, the Verse two-player PCG from Upper Deck, the Marvel one. We started playing that a lot, which is still going. And all of a sudden that casual play of it where I'm not trying to build a tournament deck and call somebody out on every rule all the time, it really just became fun because it was like, we can play three games of this in an hour. because it's just boom, boom, boom. Like, you know, it's much faster when we're not worried about that. Like, oh, I've got to get every detail. And I've really played so much more of these games. I got into Star Wars Legion and Star Wars Armada. And this is just not what I was doing prior to all this. I was playing probably all of the time, if I could, midweight and heavyweight Euros. That was probably mostly what I was playing. With some party unlock games and stuff like that thrown in there. And now I don't really play those at all. I'm playing all this kind of two-player stuff. And that's been kind of interesting. So that's been one of the things. And then the other thing I've been doing is I haven't been playing solo games nearly as much as playing video games again.
Yeah.
And I hadn't played video games significantly in 15 years.
There, you've missed a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've tried to get back into the video game stuff. I haven't really since the move. I find that I really enjoy the big epic stuff. Like I was playing Dragon Quest, and I started. I often start some of these epic games. I love Legend of Zelda: Breath of the Wild. It's an amazing game. The Horizon Zero Dawn. Looks fantastic, but I start them and then I get through a certain milestone and then something happens. Some sort of, I get busy. I have a book that I have to prepare. So instead of screen time on the big TV, I have to screen time on the iPad highlighting a book. And so I don't get the opportunity to play for a week or two. And then that becomes a month. And then that becomes 2 months. And then I have forgotten how to play the game.
Right.
And so now I feel like I can't. I tried to pick up Zelda and I was uncoordinated klutz. Like I couldn't remember how to do anything. And suddenly I'm facing, you know, major enemies and I can't do it anymore. And so I have had trouble consistently playing video games when I'm not always able to dedicate too much time to it. But there are some lovely products out there right now.
Yeah, I did beat Breath of the Wild. I got all the way through. And it was probably like two major playing sessions. The winter is much better for me playing video games. I always tell people, like, as a teacher, it's like I'm up early anyway. And then all of a sudden they'll be like, snow day. And I'm like, well, I guess I'll play video games today. You know, that would happen. Nice. Of course, now it's remote learning day. So
right. You still have to work.
The window. But, you know, things like Christmas Vacation and stuff like that, where I can kind of like just play. I'm really a morning person. So it's like I'll play once I'm up and showered. It's, my goodness, it's like 7 a.m. because I get up early. So it's like I'll play 7 to 10 in the morning and then kind of get on with the rest of the day. You know, I'll do something like that. I put majority of my time in. I'm not a good night person for something like that. I'm better at board games at night when my mind is still moving. But really, I've been sticking to like Mario and games where I can play a level in 5 minutes and then I can put it down and play a level in 5 minutes. So I beat Paper Mario and then I picked up Mario 3D World is the newest one that came out.
Yes, my son's been playing that one and loves it. He loves Bowser's Fury. He says it's one of his favorite Mario games.
Yeah, I haven't tried it yet. I've been playing the Mario one, but that's been fun. And my daughter has played a little bit of that too. So that's been fun. So
very cool.
That's been happening. All right, well, I brought you here to review games.
Oh, is that what we're doing?
I asked you to join me to review games. So do you have some games that we can review?
Absolutely.
Awesome. What do you got?
I'm trying to let's do some puzzle games first, since this is something I've been playing a lot of during this particular time. I can often do this either with or without the kids, which is cool. So let's start with, have you seen Box One?
I have not.
Box One is from Neil Patrick Harris.
Oh, okay.
The
Doogie Howser, M.D.
Doogie Howser, indeed. And the company is called Theory 11, because it's not just Neil Patrick Harris. It's this design studio called Theory 11. And this is what the box looks like. It is a puzzle game, and I can't go into too much detail because part of this is all about the discovery of what's inside this box.
Okay.
But it is designed as a solo experience. In fact, they ask you at the very beginning, basically, are you alone? And I mean, you could play this with someone else looking over your shoulder and right. maybe that's fine. But I think part of this is that this has been designed to work in one person's head so that it's all about directing your particular attention on elements of the puzzles and of the story and sharing that sort of dilutes it a little bit. But I highly recommend it if you are looking, if you're a fan of the escape room style games and the puzzle style games, this one is lovely. It's not terribly expensive. A couple of caveats though, if you are going to play it, you do need an internet connection. You don't just pick this up and think you can play it in the corner during a power outage. You need to be able to connect to the internet.
Did you try to do this?
No, but okay. I did try to play it when my wife was in the room watching television. So while I wasn't alone, I was the only one playing the game. But then at some point, I needed to listen to audio clips and video stuff. And I had to keep pausing the TV. Like, hang on a second, honey. I got to just 1 second. And I'd have to listen to a clue like two or three times to make sure I got it right. And she'd be like, are you done yet? Can I watch my show now? So definitely be able to watch or listen to things. And also don't expect to finish it in one sitting.
Okay.
But I highly recommend box one. And I hope there's a box two because this was a lot of fun. It's worth checking out for fans of puzzle games.
All right. Who's the publisher on it?
So it's Theory 11, I think, is the publisher. I don't think it has any other. It doesn't have any other publisher listed. Theory 11. And I think it's available in the big box stores if it's not available in the hobby market.
Okay.
But that's a fun one. And the other puzzle game I've been playing lately is the new Unlock set.
I'll match you.
Have you also played all three?
We did play all three. I actually hadn't played the Hades one, and you either posted on Twitter or Facebook, and I was like, oh, he's played it. I'll go play that one so we can talk about it.
Okay, absolutely. Well, here we go then. So this is a triple set, like many of the Unlock sets are now. In fact, they're all like this now. So there is what's the name of the Hades one? It's a Greek setting. In the clutches of Hades.
Oh, in the clutches of Hades.
In the clutches of Hades is the, so they have the, you know, easy, medium, hard levels. Although that doesn't necessarily match because sometimes an quote unquote easy puzzle in these can be frustrating as all get out. And the harder puzzles just make sense to you. So that doesn't necessarily connect. In the clutches of Hades is the easy one. And then there is Professor No Side's Animal O-Matic, in which you are actually using a little gun that transfers your consciousness to other animals, which is a really cool mechanism and probably my favorite of the set. And that one uses augmented reality. We should back up and say, if you don't know what Unlock is, it's, you know, these puzzle games that use a deck of cards. You're combining cards often to cause things to happen. So a key and a door might be a red and a blue card, and you add those two numbers together and sift through the deck and discover if it's a 10 and a 25, you look for the 35 in the deck and 35, oh, it's an open door. Here you go. It uses an app with various puzzles and machines and manipulations. And this Professor No Side adventure uses an AR, augmented reality mechanism, where you're actually pointing the camera at things, which cause stuff to happen, which is a very cool mechanism, but it can be a little finicky. And we found a couple of times the kids really wanted to be the one to trigger this part of the adventure, and they would often miss. Or they'd get their head in the way of the light, and so the shadow messed with the detection. So it was a little trickier. We would get the puzzle right, but because of the way we shot it, it didn't trigger, and so we lose time that way. Still a really fun adventure. Just make sure you have good lighting. And then the third one is called Around the World in 80 Minutes, which is, as you would imagine, Around the World in 80 Days. That one's a much more sprawling adventure that has a map. And a lot of fun. And I was moving along at a pretty good clip until I got lost at sea.
Yep. Yep, totally.
And that puzzle, Boy, oh boy. Sometimes these puzzles, you just don't, if your brain is not understanding what they want you to do, it can get a little painful. And so I ran out of time on that one. I think I went like 10, 15 minutes over on the time limit. But it's still, that one was also fun. I was annoyed at the Clutches of Hades. There were some visual elements there that were, I didn't realize what they were trying to tell me. And so I would sit there staring at it and asking for hints. And it felt like I was more frustrated than I wanted to be. The logic in Clutches of Hades was a little wonky. But what I do like in this latest set, they started it, I think, in the Star Wars set, is there is a full solution booklet. It's not just the hints that are in the app, but there is a full step-by-step, right. Here is how you should solve the puzzles, which I like. Like in a puzzle game, I don't like it if you're just going to give me the answer. I want you to tell me why that answer makes sense.
Mm.
And so this booklet actually explains, well, you should have looked at these three things, and that would tell you the answer to this puzzle. That I like that. And I'm glad that they're doing that in these unlock sets. And I find it a very worthwhile element of the set. So it's still a lovely package. But I think the No Side adventure is definitely my favorite, with the various animals and the cartoony artwork. And the kids enjoyed playing that one. The other two, less strong. What do you think?
Yeah, no, I generally agreed in terms of all that. I think, you know, like the Hades with the level one, the best level one I ever played was the Exit Sunken Treasure, I think it is, or something like that. And in the Exit ones, the really level ones, it's like you just literally flip a page for each puzzle. Like there's no hunting. It's just you're on this page. You solved it. Now, it's a little too easy for me, but in terms of bringing kids or new people in, I always thought they should like label that as like start here, exit. You know, I thought that would be really helpful. They tend to just say, oh, it's level one difficulty. But level one, it should really be like this is the – like I feel like if stores could showcase that one, people would know what they're getting into. I guess they're afraid of making it sound too simple for people like, well, we're smarter than level one, you know. Then they would have that.
They're probably worried about if they put a big red banner on it that said beginner level, then they would not sell those to the more experienced players. Another one of the exits, what is it? The House of Riddles is the one that I recommend for first time players. I've actually suggested doing, when we're able to do in-person parties, getting maybe two sets of that and letting all the kids work their way through that puzzle as sort of a, group activity, as opposed to doing a virtual escape room or a real escape room, for younger kids, that would work really well. But as an introductory escape game, the House of Riddles from Exit is excellent. It's again, like you said, very simple and a little bit on rails. In doing that, it really guides you through that whole concept, that whole system, and feels really solid as an introduction to the genre.
Yeah, it's actually interesting that you mentioned escape rooms because it just came up in my Facebook feed, and it was just about 1 year ago that my wife Kathy and I, we went away, and it was the last time we went away. And all we did was we Airbnb'd in Coventry, Connecticut.
Okay.
Which is right out near UConn. And for people who don't know Connecticut, one of the biggest universities in the area is University of Connecticut, and it's in the absolute middle of nowhere.
Easy to get to. My brother and both of my uncle and my dad went to UConn. Yeah. And so we have spent many a time at UConn, and it is not an easy place to get to. No. And there's not a lot there.
No.
They had to build
around the campus.
Right.
Yeah.
Is there an escape room nearby?
We did an escape room. That was one of the things we did while we were away. So we did an escape room, and we like ate inside a restaurant It was an amazing weekend when I think back
on it. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
But we brought a bunch of games. We were able to play a bunch of games and kind of cook. And that's kind of always been our favorite. We actually enjoy, like, when we go away, we like to cook. Some people like the break from cooking, but we actually are like, yeah. Oh, we could, like, make a full meal and kind of just have time. But it was just interesting that that was a year ago. And then it wasn't long, 2 weeks later, you know, that we didn't realize.
Yeah. We were getting the pictures 1 year ago this week. We were at the World Championships for the National Ninja League.
Oh, okay.
Like this big sporting competition with tons of people crammed into an arena and doing obstacle course competitions with the two kids. And that just seems unheard of that was only a year ago that we were doing that sort of thing.
Did you go to Gamma?
I did not. I haven't been to Gamma in a couple years.
Okay.
But that was like the last.
Yeah.
That was when we were like, we knew it was coming, and that was sort of the iffy one.
Yep.
There were some people that went to the Gamma trade show and they're like, this is probably not a good idea, but we're going to do this. And then they quarantined for 2 weeks or something afterward, to make sure that they were okay. But only a week or two before that was Dice Tower West.
Right.
And I was there for that. And we also knew it was coming. We were all doing like extra hand washing and hand sanitizing, and we weren't yet wearing masks, but there was this extra specter over this convention, knowing that something could be coming, and we had no idea exactly what it was going to be like, but that was our last hurrah, at least for me, last hurrah of a public event.
Yeah. So Brian and Larry went to Gamma on behalf of the store.
Yep.
And they were there and I had been dismissed from school. And I think they came home on like Sunday, I want to say. So Friday was kind of the day we got out, and they had to fly because it's Reno. So they had to go Reno to LAX, LAX to Dallas-Fort Worth, Dallas-Fort Worth to, no, I think then Dallas-Fort Worth came into Bradley in Connecticut. So I think, but they had all those places they had to stop, knowing we can't do any, we have to just walk to our plane and not do, like, find a bathroom, right? At that point, it was like in full swing and people were beside themselves. So, and then I remember Brian walked in the door, because again, he was living with us at the time, and was like, hi, great to see you. I'm taking a shower. And he took all his clothes off, bagged them, took a shower, like scrubbed everything down. Like, we were just at that point where you just didn't know how is this
we
thing
didn't,
carrying.
Yeah, you know? We hadn't gotten into a routine yet. It was just everything was dangerous. Yeah.
So anyway, we did enjoy No Side as well. We had issues aiming that thing a lot, where it was like we knew what we're supposed to aim at and we couldn't hit. I feel like if they just removed the 1 minute penalty and just said, try again, or what were you trying to aim at, or something that just told you you're either on the right track but you missed, that would help with the technology, because that's the best part. Unlock's doing a great job with the innovation of the technology.
Yeah.
They don't really let you know that you're using the technology or that you're using it correctly.
Yeah.
They just kind of are like, here's some technology. Good luck.
I mean, I understand what they're trying to avoid. They don't want you to just fire this pistol, ray gun at everything. If there was no penalty, then you'd just be like, shoot, 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 shoot. Yeah. Like, you know, I'm not solving the puzzle. I'm just brute forcing it by aiming at everything. So I get it, but it is frustrating when you had solved the puzzle and it's just because of some technical glitch that you're not doing it. And there were a couple in the, around the world in 80 minutes, there were a couple of moments where the app was also a little glitchy. There's some compass work and some watch puzzles in the 80 minutes that you have to be a little precise with. And if you don't get it just right, you're also going to lose a minute. And then when you're that close, it's frustrating to be told that you're wrong when you know, like, the puzzle makes sense. And then you end up losing a couple more minutes as you, like, rethink everything.
Mm.
You know, what I thought I had that right. Am I doing it wrong? Maybe I'm backwards. And you lose another minute. Oh, okay. Well, maybe I was right the first time. It's frustrating.
Yeah, the around the world in 80 minutes was my favorite one. I ended up enjoying that one the most. There were some puzzles that were probably easier with two people.
Yes, and then in fact, there's one using the app in Around the World where I don't think it's possible with only one person.
Right.
It's like a physical, it's a physical dexterity challenge. I don't, again, don't want to spoil it. But I had to go grab my kids. I was playing this one solo, but after like two or three attempts where I'm like, I can't do this. And I ran upstairs and said, children, come here. We're doing this challenge right now. And then we finished and I ran away again.
Nice. Yeah. So we had a lot of fun with that. However, our iPad died in the middle of it.
Oh, no.
About 30 minutes left and yada, yada, yada. I can't remember if it was late at night. We came back to it the next day and then we literally reset the entire game. So our time is tough to know because we obviously finished with plenty of time because we ran through all the puzzles again.
Yeah.
But I think we did the end in 30 minutes, but that was right about at that at sea puzzle that you're talking about.
Yes. Yeah. I was lost at sea for a while and needed to ask for a lot of help.
Yeah. That one was tricky. And there was one other in there with the exchange that we found frustrating.
Oh, that one I thought was clever, actually.
It was clever,
but
we felt like it was too many weird twists and leaps in terms of what they were doing. But it also was the order that we received our information was a little bit, like, I think if people got the order, I'm not giving the puzzle away, but it was like we weren't told to do something until later. And then it was like, oh, that's why the puzzle makes sense, because we weren't given this information. Whereas I think other people might have gotten it if they got an error. If you tempted to do something, then it would kind of give you a hint.
Interesting. Yeah, sometimes it does that.
So anyway, that's that. But all in all, I really like the unlocks. I love their innovation. And the more they lean into that, it distinguishes them from Exit, where I think the puzzles are a little like more clever in terms of that. But I like the innovation and using the app is really fun. And the kids had a lot of fun when we did the Star Wars one, although we had two kids because we had Brian's son and my daughter, and they're like fighting over who gets to use the app with the Star Wars ones, I remember. But
yes.
But all in all, they're really fun, and the escape rooms have been really fun. And then we just pass them around between friends, which is a great thing to do during this time when you can't see people, but you can pass games to each other and then be like, oh, did you do that one? And you can kind of talk about it later. And, oh, yeah, we got stuck on this, and we really like that. Our friends left us – they gave us one. It was like a train one. I don't even know what the company was. And they left a sticky note because they knew there'd be something I would get frustrated with, because very strictly mathematically speaking, it was false what they were telling you to do. So it was not correct math. And they wanted me to know that you need to do something that's mathematically incorrect, because as a math major, they knew that would irk me. But I actually figured it out before I looked at their sticky note. I was like, oh, I bet they want us to do this, even though it makes no sense. But I think because my friends had said, hey, there's going to be a mathematically incorrect moment that I I was able to do that. So. Awesome. All right. Well, I got a chance to play Funfair.
Ooh.
I don't know. Have you heard of Unfair?
I have heard of Unfair.
All right, so yeah, this is Good Games Publishing, and they released a game called Unfair, and Unfair is excellent. It's really good. It does have Take That in it, so the goal of this one is to make it Unfair is one of those games where you don't realize how strategic it is until you start playing it. Like, you think it's a family card game, and then you start playing it, and this is like a two-hour – I mean, this is like a, you know – approaching Terraforming Mars-esque tableau builder. This is not – well, think of your first five-player game of Wingspan. Did you do a five-player game of Wingspan early on, or did you avoid it?
Yes, I think I did.
Think of that, right? Yeah. Where it was like, oh my gosh, we've been here for 2 hours, right?
Yeah.
So Unfair kind of had that, and it's really good. But this, they wanted to make family kind of better for families. So they got rid of the Take That, which is probably what it's most famous for, and then it's 15 minutes per player.
Oh, wow, okay.
But this plays very snappy. So Funfair is you're building this amusement park and you're trying to add all these features to your ride. So you want to have your thrill ride. And then if it's a roller coaster, add dips and drops and loops. And this kind of upgrades the star level of it, which will give you more money at the end of every round because it attracts more people to your park. Yeah. Meanwhile, you're also adding features like air conditioning, comfortable seating, bathroom accessibility, guest services, and eventually you can add a flagpole to the top, which means you can add no more features when you put the flag on top.
Okay.
And at the end of the game, it scores kind of per feature you have. So the more things you can add, you can also add themes like pirate theme and fairy theme and jungle theme. So you can have like a jungle pirate theme.
Okay.
And stuff like that. And as you're playing the cards, they all trigger abilities. So a pirate one might say, hey, after you play this one, which usually you're spending money to play them, you get money back. It's like you dug up treasure, right? So they're playing off of that, or dig for more cards. Essentially, it's a tableau building game. And the rounds are just like you get three actions where you can either like purchase a card to play, or you can draft more cards. You can get these blueprint cards, which can give you points for completing something and bonus points for completing even more. But you lose 10 points, kind of a la Ticket to Ride, if you don't do it.
Okay.
So you've kind of got that feature. But the blueprints shut down 2/3 of the way through the game. The game is 6 rounds, and after 4 rounds, you can't go get blueprints. So there's no like hoping you get something that you can complete at the very end to grab 20 points, which, so it's very clever. Like, they really knew what they were doing when they made it. So I enjoy it. I enjoy the speed of that game. I would say ultimately Unfair was better for me. And interestingly enough, which I hadn't come across this, I'm not really a house rules person, but I always felt like, oh, we could just play Unfair and say, don't do mean things to each other. You know?
Okay. Yeah.
Unfair has these event cards that they took out of Funfair, and the event cards were interesting because the bottom would often be like, you know, steal 10 money from Eric. But the top might be something like play your next card for 15 less money. So it was pretty enticing to do the thing that wasn't take that. It wasn't like, oh, I can either gain 1 money or steal 10 from Eric. Well, I know what I'm doing. I'm stealing 10 from Eric, right?
Yeah.
So, and then, but in the game, they actually gave you a card that said world peace. There were different modes you could play in Unfair, and world peace was nobody can play cards that negatively affect other players. It's just a rule you're agreeing to.
Now, okay.
I could just do that, but I didn't realize there's people who like the designer saying, hey, this is a way you can play the game.
Yeah.
I think of a Rotto type. Rotto would appreciate that, right? He would be like, oh, I don't want to, but if the designer says I can do it, then I can do it.
Sure.
It also has like lunchtime mode, so you can play faster. There's like a quick version of it and some other things that are in Unfair. What were you saying?
Okay. Oh, yeah. No. I think that was good, what I was saying. I don't know what I was saying.
So Funfair is great. It's an awesome intro. It's great for families. It's a little heavy on the reading and the interaction. So I mean, kind of how the interaction works in Wingspan. I would put Funfair kind of on that level of tableau builder, where it is family and, you know, and kind of what's the term Tom's using now? Welcoming games.
Yes, welcoming
games. It's kind of in that realm, but it's got that little extra piece where it's probably a next step game at the end of the day. So ultimately I like Unfair better, but Unfair will run you 30 to 45 minutes per player. This is going to be right in that 15, maybe 20 minutes per player the first time you play.
Cool.
Unfair from Good Games Publishing.
Nice. So I have one other that I brought that I wanted to talk to you about, and I think this would be right up your alley considering how much you enjoy a game called Fleet, the dice game.
Oh.
And you may already know, because I think this has probably been compared favorably, Hadrian's Wall.
Oh, you went a different direction. I thought you were going from the same designers.
No. This is from Bobby Hill and Renegade Game Studios. This is another, it's a flip and write game instead of a roll and write game. But this is one of those more complex rando writer style games, which is why I'm associating it with Fleet the Dice Game. Have you seen the sheets on this one, Brant?
I feel like I have, but not. I can't particularly picture them. I have been known to enjoy Fleet the Dice Game from time to time.
From time to time, I'm sort of digging this out so that if you are seeing this on video, I can show it to you. And I'm now going to have to throw this on the floor. Sorry, game components.
2019, I thoroughly enjoyed 2019 because Fleet the Dice Game came out in our store on like January 2nd or 3rd, and I played it and loved it. And I said, that's it. I'm teaching every person I can this game this year. And I toured that game at all those conventions. And I taught every publisher, designer, content creator I could come across. I taught them that game.
So you saw the size of the box. It's maybe, an 8-inch box or so?
Okay.
The sheets
are that
are
size.
The entire oh size, gosh. And is you're given two?
Two. Oh man! Oh, I
so
gotta play
you
this
have
game.
Like a whole tableau. You're building Hadrian's Wall, and you have to fill in all sorts of boxes, which are then going to trigger other bonuses. And you know, this is the style of game that Roland writes are mm-hmm. often at these days. And so you'll fill in a box, and that gives you a bonus elsewhere on your board, and you're trying to get majorities and complete sets and all that sort of thing. The way the mechanism works is that you are given two cards at the beginning of a round. One of these is going to be a bonus for the end of the game, like a scoring bonus. And the other is going to be the parameters that you're working with for this round, giving you some income and giving you some trading opportunities with other players and all of that. And so you've got these two cards. Which one am I going to build toward? And it's good to have those goals because that you saw the size of that sheet. There's tons of things to build toward. And to have a focus that says you're going to earn points for completed sections of wall. Or you're going to earn points for a particular court building. And the more of those you get, the more points you're going to get. And then you use those resources from the other card to get you there. And it's a lot of, you've got four different colors of figures. You've got some resources and you're trading some in to get others. And whereas a lot of these games just have you tracking that sort of thing on your own sheet, this actually gives you, in fact, I threw them all on the floor, little meeples, little wooden characters. So your income at the beginning, you've got a handful basically of meeples. And now, well, I need to spend one of these purple ones to do this. And that's going to give me a yellow one. And because they're physical components, you can figure out that churning without trying to keep it all in your head, which would be, I think, impossible. I like it a lot. There's a solo mode where you're trying to meet certain thresholds of score. And I have played it that way. That just adds a couple of extra card draws, and you can trade with the Phantom deck, that sort of thing. But other than that, it plays pretty much the same way with the other players, multiplayer, as it does as a solo game. And it's solid, and solid in a heavy sense, too. With all that paper, it's a very heavy game, physically. But I really liked Hadrian's Wall from Renegade Games and Bobby Hill, and Garfield Games is the co-publisher there. I liked it a lot.
I got to track that down for sure.
Yes. I think you really would like it. As a fan of Fleet the Dice Game, it gives me that similar vibe of being complex to begin with, but also that churning and triggering. I do this, which then gives me this bonus, which then gives me this bonus, and then leads me toward this scoring opportunity. I like it a lot.
Nice. Yeah, I thought, I would run and grab it, but I'm afraid I actually don't remember where it is. But I actually got sent, Ben and Matt, who made Fleet the Dice Game, may have heard that I enjoyed the game. And
possible.
So Kathy and I were offered the opportunity to play test their follow-up, which is Three Sisters. And that's coming to Kickstarter in March 9th, I think. So it's like a week and a half.
Okay.
So I'm going to play that on the channel as well for their Kickstarter. And so I got a chance to play test that, which was great. And it was funny. The biggest feedback they got was in Fleet the Dice Game, you roll the dice and everybody drafts, and the leftover die triggers for everybody, which is the same as La Granja and a few other games that do that. And the original iteration of Three Sisters didn't have that. And everybody was like, this is the thing you have to do. The trademark is that the leftover die does something. And they may or may not have a follow-up game after Three Sisters. I'm not at liberty to say, but they may keep that mark as well in that game. So kind of the cornerstone for that. So that's enjoyable. But this one it's flipping cards. Is that the mechanism for drafting?
Well, you've got your own personal deck of 12 cards. It plays over six rounds. So you've got 12 cards. You'll draw two of them. Everyone has the same cards, but you personally will be given your own two, and you then need to choose which of the two you're going to do, and knowing that you're not going to get to use both of them for scoring. So which one is for scoring and which one is for resources, and then you won't see those cards again.
Gotcha.
You'll draw two new ones.
That's great. Yeah, that's good decision making.
Yeah,
awesome. All right, I got one more and then we'll wrap up here. It has been awesome. I think this one might be up your alley as well. I don't know if you've played it or not, but I'm pretty sure that I've heard that you're a fan of Star Trek.
Yes, I've played Star Trek Expeditions.
Have you played Star Trek Expeditions? So this one, interestingly, is based off of the movie. Oh, who was the director?
J.J. Abrams.
J.J. Abrams. Gosh, I should remember that.
The Kelvin universe, the Kelvin timeline, as they call it.
Ah, there you go. So this is based off of the Kelvin timeline series of movies. And so I had heard good things about this. And my mom is an eBay sales expert.
Okay.
She has retired from her job and she's a full-time eBay sales. So she tracked this down on eBay and this was my Christmas present this year.
Oh, nice.
So that was exciting to get this because this is very out of print.
Yes.
And has an expansion that I guess is also out of print. So I don't know if I'll ever acquire that, but
yes.
I'd want to try this. So this is a co-op game where you play the characters from Star Trek and you kind of have a hand of cards. And the interesting, it's designed by Reiner Knizia. I probably
it's a
should
Knizia
make sure
game.
That I mentioned that. And it uses the click system because it's WizKids as well in terms of all that. And so it's kind of a hand management game. And you're trying to solve, I don't know what you're trying to solve. You're trying to reach benchmarks on these expeditions, I guess, is what they are.
Yeah.
And you've got a planet that they made up. So it's no story that I know of from Star Trek. I'm not the most knowledgeable from Star Trek, but it's certainly not the movie, this movie. I remember this movie well enough. So they made up a planet and there's a Klingon battle warship that's there when you get there and you're fighting back and forth with this ship. And meanwhile, you're beaming down to the planet and traveling to locations where there's a variety of different events that you can put out. And you're trying to kind of solve those fires. Meanwhile, you've got these like tile shaped story cards that you're trying to resolve. They're quests or whatever.
Yep.
And those are like political, militaristic and I don't know, emergency situations. I can't remember what the other one was. There's like three categories.
Yep.
Scientific, I guess, would be one of them. They're
could
science
be, yeah.
officers. So I'm pretty good with Star Trek. I've seen a bunch of it, but I'm more of a Star Wars person, I have to admit.
Yep.
I never even actually said that. I titled the episode. I'm just so tired of all these Star Wars because all of our episodes are titled after Star Wars quotes. I actually got the idea from Rolling Dice and Taking Names where they name all their episodes after rock tunes. Tony names the episodes for them and they're usually rock and roll songs. And I said, I'm going to do something like that. And I went with Star Wars quotes, but I'm pretty sure that your eldest is averse to Star Wars. Am I correct?
He is not a fan.
Yeah. So that was actually a quote from the Upright Citizens Brigade. I don't know if you remember that group of folks.
Yes. Yes, yes.
Yeah, my best friend was actually a member of the Upright Citizens Brigade, the New York City branch. And Amy Poehler is probably the most famous person to come out of that.
Yep.
He was part of the Upright Citizens Brigade. And then actually, ironically, that friend moved from being a writer in Brooklyn to being a writer in L.A. And he worked for Riot Games, which makes League of Legends. And of course, Mechs vs. Minions came out while he was employed there.
Nice.
So I managed to acquire a copy through him, which was awesome.
Oh, very cool.
So that was neat. Anyway, side note. But that's where the title came from. It's an episode of that. So the story is kind of that interesting piece where you're trying to complete these different ones, and there's kind of a timer every turn. And it scales very well because there's just a deck of turns, and there's kind of you have 30 clicks. I don't know what they're called.
Okay.
To complete whatever you're trying to do. So however many players, one or four, are in the game, you just always turn over a card and move down that track, and it tells you how many actions you have, and you can move and play cards, and eventually you end up rolling dice, and the dice can be, it's like 1 through 5, and there's also a 7, I think, or maybe it's 2 through 6, and there's a 7, but the 7, you take a click of damage. So you have to click your little thing down, and you have like a bonus. So if I'm a science officer, I might like add 9 to my die roll, which is pretty good because the dice feel like, in addition to whatever cards, they're just kind of that variable factor. They're not the complete decision, you know?
Yes.
But you can't decide a lot afterward. And that's always the tricky part with the dice rolls of, well, I've committed what I want, and now the dice just don't show up. There are some re-rolls and some, you know, change a die face. So there's a few things you can do, but ultimately. And the story is really interesting because you can progress at levels. It's like, oh, complete this at a 19 or better, at a 22 or better, or at a 25 or better. and you get different outcomes. It actually has branching paths. So that's pretty interesting in terms of then such and such happens with the story. In the end, you then basically get a score based on how well you did on each of these.
Yes.
And there's kind of like a negative. Things can drop off, and that's how you lose. If you just don't complete stories, you lose points on these various tracks. But the end game scoring is a little bit anticlimactic. It's a little bit nebulous. Yeah. Like, you read a story and you're like, well, you kind of solved political strife, but things are still up in the air. And yeah. Well, there wasn't an all-out coup, but there was a war. Like, you don't feel great in the end unless you solve them all at their best level, which sometimes is a little bit outside of you. So what would be amazing is there's lots of events in the game. There's tons of these events at each site. But if there was more of those story tiles and the branching paths branched even more, and you didn't really know, or you did like random branching paths, I think it would be a little more interesting, because inevitably you're just going to try to complete each one at its top level to get the top score, and the dice may or may not determine that. But it was fun. I had a good time being able to play that with a friend who's very favorable towards Star Trek. In fact, he and his friends invented a game, a Star Trek game, that is quite epic in the 1970s. And it's been around in multiple iterations ever since then. And it's amazing. They have all the boards, starting with the taped together colored construction paper board, through the like dot matrix printer board, through the like early 90s printing, to now somebody actually worked in a print shop in the early 2000s and made a full board. And so it's very interesting to watch the history of this game over 45 years now that they've had this game around. So
wow,
that was fun to be able to play this with him in terms of all that. So, but you said you've played it before?
I have. It's been a long time. I played this. I purchased a copy when it first came out, which is when did the move, like 2010?
That 2011? Sounds good.
It was shortly after the first
2011. So yeah, the movie was probably 2010,
something like that. And I remember enjoying it, but that sort of end game scoring where you have these gradients, you know, you score between this threshold and you get the okay ending and you can hopefully get the good ending. I found it, like you said, anticlimactic. I like my co-ops to have you either succeed or fail. And to, you know, overcome the adversary. And if we make it through and we didn't lose, then hooray, that's the possible best ending that we've got. For some reason, when it's like, oh, let's check out your score at the end and see how you did and check it against the chart, it's, I don't know, less interesting. I let it go. The guy who runs our game group bought the copy off of me and has played it a few times since, but I didn't play it much after that initial flurry of plays when I first got it, and I let it leave the collection.
Yeah, I want to play it with my dad, because I definitely spent a lot of nights with my dad watching particularly Star Trek Next Generation, because that was kind of in my age bracket, and sitting down and watching those with him and probably, you know, enjoying Star Trek there. So I'd like to play with him. He has been vaccinated once and he will get his second soon. And then I think I'll feel a lot better.
Okay.
You know, getting together and doing that. So I think this is something I may try to play with him. I think he might enjoy it.
Yeah,
I'm not sure
good.
That he'll get into that new cast. You know, I think he would enjoy the original series most.
Sure.
In terms of all that.
But I mean, you can certainly pretend. If you squint, you can pretend it's right. The original cast.
There you go. Awesome. Well, this has been a blast, Eric. Thank you so much.
Hey, you bet. It's always good to hang out and talk about games.
I know. I can't wait to do our Dice Tower North catch-up palooza. We've got a bunch. I think Castell is something you still have yet to play, correct?
I still have yet to play, and you've been evangelizing that one for some time. I need to get that played. In fact, I was trying to play it at the Dice Tower Retreat, and there was no copy in the Dice Tower
library.
That's
right. Yeah, that's right. Crystal said she was going to try to get one down there or something.
Yes.
Well, when that was still traveling, I don't know that will travel anymore, you know, in terms of that. So I'll have to see.
I don't know. I mean, once we can start doing events again, I'm sure the library will move. Tom has continued to curate it.
Right.
So it's not just going to live in a warehouse forever. It is going to need to go somewhere. But we need to actually have an event and be able to to take it somewhere.
Yeah, and I'm excited for you to play Castell, because even as much as I've hyped it and people have hyped it, it is, it's that good. So I'm not worried about it being like a letdown. You know, there's some games where they get hyped for too long, 3-4 years, and suddenly you're like, okay, this just can't be this good. But yeah. Castell, it really is that solid. I mean, I don't know, they walk away being like, I must own this game, but it's that, it's solid enough that it's just a great game. I know the brothers Murph are also huge fans. And then Magna Storm is another one. And in terms of that. And you still have not played Twilight Struggle, which I would love to play with you sometime, but I realize that's a different animal. But I am not a shark, is the good part. I don't know that game very well. I can just teach it well. So
that
might be
a good one. I've heard using the app on Twilight Struggle is a good way to go.
That is a good way too. But there's nothing like looking your opponent in the eye, holding up the card, grabbing your shoe, banging it on the table and saying, we will bury you, and getting to live out those events. At least some of those sillier ones,
to expect.
Yeah. So this will be fun in terms of that. Awesome, Eric. Well, I think people can mostly catch up with you on the Dice Tower podcast and Dice Tower tonight on every other Wednesday with Crystal Dax, correct?
Indeed. That's the video show, and dicetower.com is the website for the Dice Tower. And of course, I do audiobooks and stuff. You can go to audible.com and just search for my name, and you'll get all sorts of fun things to listen to.
Yes, thanks to your advice for Kathy as well. We are like kind of mid setting up her studio to start doing some audio work.
Oh, excellent.
As well. So everything kind of got stalled, as everything did, but we've got soundproofing and things happening up there. So that she's really excited to venture into that. And you were very nice to provide some advice. So
very cool.
That's been good. Awesome. Thanks so much, everybody, for watching on the channel. Step into the portal, for listening on the podcast, Portal Gaming Podcast. This is episode 162. I'm just so tired of all these Star Wars, so I reviewed a Star Trek game. and I am your host, The Brant, joined by my special guest and co-host,
Eric Summerer. Good night, everybody.
Thanks so much, everybody. And until next time, we hope you step into the portal. Bye now, everybody.